Leah Goodman, Reel 3. Yes, you're going to tell me now about the effects of your father's arrest, aren't you? You know, how that affected your position and your mother as well.
Yeah, because, so let's say I was separated from them for a short while, A, living on my own with this family called Sotisova, who in fact were the only ones during the war amongst the Christian Poles who in fact gave us shelter, and I'm absolutely convinced it's thanks to them that I'm still alive today. It made all the difference to my life, the fact that they were there and available, maybe at very short notice, to take me in for a time. All the other Christians I came across during the war did it for money. But I was actually, on the other hand, I can't say that I was maltreated in any way. I mean, they seemed to have been very nice and polite and did not show any cruelty towards me in any way whatsoever. This Dobrovolska family, I was only there for, it must have been quite a short time, without my mother. That's the family who kept me for money. Now, reading about the Holocaust in the last years, I realized more than ever that the Jews survived Nazi occupation in proportion to the sympathy of the local population towards them. And considering that the Jews and the, after all, they were Poles, we were Poles, with Jews as a religion. And the Christians, with the great majority, were Catholics, had the common enemy, and they really were so virulently anti-German to the extent that I do remember as a child, in fact, hearing the story how a German would go by on a bicycle and a Pole would be walking and with a hatchet would actually just go and damage his head. As he was walking by and the cyclist was going, and then for that there would be maybe 100 Poles, Christian Poles, executed for one death. They would arrest them, have raids in the street and just randomly arrest, and there was an enormous anti-German feeling that they didn't somehow rally around and protect the fellow citizens. On the contrary, would also denounce them to the authorities. On the other hand, I mean, they were Christians, but they were human beings, so you obviously can ask yourself, well, you know, what did the Jews do to them to be such an unpopular minority? I think that one of the big reasons was, A, that they were fairly uneducated, primitive people. They had a thing that the Jews killed Jesus Christ. I mean, that has done an enormous damage to the Jews. Wonderful, innocent Jesus Christ, after all, let's face it, happened to be a Jew. He was not killed by the Jews, because the Jews at the time killed people by stoning them, and he was actually crucified, which was the Roman. So it was, you know, as basic as that. The other thing is that the Jews knew how to write, and somehow they were living amongst mostly illiterate people who felt, because they could write and they could count, maybe in a way they needed them, but then somehow they would diddle them because they were cleverer than them. I don't mean the Jews in any way born cleverer than anybody else, but discrimination against them made them live maybe more by their wits, which gives the impression of them being more intelligent. Now, my mother joining me, that child, Tosha, her name was. Tosha, you know, was correct towards me, which was the child at the Bogolsky, but she must have been a bitchy little girl, because, I mean, I've met them since, friends of my children, and then somehow I had two of those in my childhood during the war, and they very much reminded me of slightly suffering under the tutelage of somebody who was like a slightly gang leader and not particularly kind. Now, an enormous trauma happened to us at the Dobrovolska family, that we were blackmailed. We were blackmailed. Now, we were blackmailed, from what I understand, we were blackmailed by, we thought, even at the time, by somebody who the Dobrovolska family knew themselves. Why they needed money so badly, or why they became so greedy, is difficult to understand. So, if to give you a little bit more of a background to it, if there were, as I said, several Jews living in that family, if the doorbell rang once, it meant that nobody knew that there were, the password was to ring the bell three times. Now, I must have developed some sort of anxieties along the way, because the only thing I remember is that if the doorbell rang once, I had a nervous stomach and I needed to go to the loo, and it upset my stomach. So, but it's very, very interesting to look back at it, because I don't remember anything else, no other state of anxiety. The only thing was that enormous symptom. Even to this day, if I'm worried, and very often people who are worried or stressed or whatever, or frightened, I will get it. I mean, not to the extent to have to go to the loo, but I will get actually sort of something in my stomach. But at the time, it definitely affected my stomach enough to have to go to the loo. So these, and then I do remember sort of crying and saying to my mother, you better give them, you better give them. There was enormous hoo-ha that they wanted money. And then within this group of Jews living there, how many of them must have been? Three, four, was a woman my mother stopped being on speaking terms with, for whatever reason. You know, you must have been fairly stressful to live. I, by the way, I could go outside. I mean, I could go into the street. So what excuse there was of the family that I could go into the street, I don't know. And I also don't remember that my mother was able to leave the flat and go in and out. That I obviously didn't cause a problem, because I don't remember it. This woman, who my mother was not on speaking terms with, left the flat. The idea was that my mother also was able to leave the flat and told that woman that to tell me to also leave the flat, but I sort of didn't believe her. And, you know, there was some connection with that woman my mother was not on speaking to, which I was suspicious of, and that made my mother come back and actually give something, give a gold bracelet or something. But I do remember crying and sort of pulling at my mother, give them everything we've got. I mean, that I do remember as being horribly traumatic. Now, if something like that happened, the address stopped being safe anyhow. Because you could give them anything you like, but the fact that they really knew that that you were Jews and threatened to denounce you to the Gestapo, they could denounce you anyhow. At that particular time, my mother used to say things to me like, "If anybody comes and they come and then they arrest me, you must not say that I'm your mother," which actually seems quite incredible. Let's say I was 7 years old. To hear your mother say, you know, if there is a crisis, I'm not your mother, and at the end of the war, when everything is over, you must go to Jewish people. So in fact, what she was telling me is, you know, I'll be separated from you, and after the war, you must go to Jewish people. That meant that she wasn't going to survive. She actually was conditioning me. So I would say at that particular time, really, in fact, my own sort of angst and anxiety were developing. We then left and went to another family, again for money. Now, in that family, something else very traumatic happened was that my mother was curfew at 8 o'clock and my mother wasn't coming back. And as, again, I mean, I just, when I look back on it, it's quite incredible that there I was as a child. I didn't cry, I didn't go into hysterics. Maybe I felt that going into hysterics wouldn't have helped in any way whatsoever. And we had a bag, actually, when I started doing art, I painted a painting on me sitting on that bag that was our possession, which looked sort of, you know, small traveling bag, like hand luggage on a plane. Yes, fairly small. All our belongings were in there. As if we didn't have any clothes in wardrobes or anything. This is what I remember. That's what, or maybe it was just the valuables were in there, what values could we have? And I sat on it. Now, the family whom we were with wanted to go and rummage through this bag. They wanted to rummage through this bag. And really, in fact, you know, and they were discussing what they were going to do with me. So obviously, as far as I'm concerned, my mother wasn't coming back. It was very, very dangerous to be out after curfew. Somewhere 8:20, my mother turned up, and I just really sat tight on that bag. Mind you, they couldn't give me a shove, but a shove I didn't get. Now, according to my mother's notes, something which I did not know, that my mother pretended she was going out to look for money to pay family, this particular family, at the end of the month, so that they would not feel that she in fact had the family on her, that she had to go out, which actually makes a lot of sense. And that somebody who was living with us, there was a woman who did not do that, in fact was robbed by these people, and then they just threw her out because there was no more money. But with all of this, these people were civil to me. I mean, I don't remember anybody being unkind or shouting or hitting me or anything like that. Now, I departed to Czechoslovakia. Now, I was told by my mother over the years that she knew that there was a way of going to Hungary, but she did not know how to contact this underground channel taking Jews to Hungary. But even while my father was still with her, she knew of it, but she just had no point of contact. Obviously, you couldn't do directory inquiry and ask for a name. And that somebody who somehow she did know or knew of somebody else who was going to leave, and she went to the station, and that person parted with the information as she was leaving herself. According to the notes, which I was just reading, my mother is not mentioning that at all. She's only mentioning that she managed to get hold of a guy, we had got a group of people together. When I was at the Yad Vashem, I did make inquiries, and I was told that it was a youth organization from Belgium. Also, I saw an exhibition where it was actually mentioned about Zionist youth organizations who did, in fact, have this channel of taking Jews from Poland to Hungary. But on the other hand, besides that lady who was working in the archives in Yad Vashem, speaking to people and asking them, nobody has heard of anybody, they've never met anybody who knew of anybody who went on this underground channel. And the child Holocaust survivors, I also asked, and I was pointed out to a gentleman, an older man than myself, who said that yes, that he was actually taking Jews from Hungary to Romania, that this underground channel went on to Romania. And but he himself only knew the one link. Each time it was only one link. So this is as near as I got to know about it. Now, discussing with that cousin of my mother's in Germany, both his wife and himself, this camp survivor, said, in no way can they imagine that my mother and I would have survived had we stayed on in Poland. Going from family to family, the money running out, you know, you're sort of like hunted animals, and at the end, you know, the miracles would have stopped repeating themselves, and being able to go to Czechoslovakia actually in fact saved our lives. It seems quite incredible that beginning of 1944, anybody could have, you know, a woman with an 8-year-old child could leave illegally and go through actually a frontier which was occupied by the Nazis. Now, the journey I remember quite well. I don't remember the train journey to the frontier. I remember that we were a small group of people, and we were walking in a forest, and I remember the guide. I remember there was a girl who couldn't walk, and she was strapped to her mother by the waist with a belt. Now, meanwhile, reading this journal, this notes based on my mother's story, which I think is quite interesting, that a woman had a lover who was a German, a Jewish woman, living with this lover who was a German high-ranking officer, and employed her girlfriend as a housekeeper, who also was Jewish, but obviously not known to anybody, who had a child. So when this high-ranking officer was visiting and staying, let's say, on leave with this woman, this child, who must have been a little bit older, because I remember she was older than myself, had to go into a cupboard and was hidden in the cupboard. And somehow he came on an extended leave, and she had to be in that cupboard for so long that she, in fact, couldn't walk well anymore. Actually, heartbreak when you think that. And that child, let's say she was 10 or 11, was dragged by this mother. And there were two groups. because, you know, we, part of us were walking. How many? My mother actually says we were six. Walking slowly, and we were in the group walking fast. So I do remember it was 32 kilometers, which is actually quite a distance for an 8-year-old child, and there was a lot of snow. It was a mile, but there was a lot of snow on the ground. And the guide said to us who were walking separated, we were in the first group, said, "Oh, I'm going to go back to get the other. You wait for me here, and I'll get to the other group to join us up." In fact, he disappeared. He disappeared, and we were stranded, which was so highly dangerous, and we were a group of people stranded in the mountains without a guide. And so my mother remembered, you know, my mother's notes are much more horrific than mine, because, I mean, I didn't feel in such a terrible danger. But actually, in fact, we managed to get back, which was very dangerous, to get again on the train, and actually our whole group managed to go back to Krakow. I mean, you know, there was nothing else we could do, and how we managed to hitch a lift. My mother knocking, and it was early hours in the morning, knocking at a door and saying that put the key pass, because I was not a well child, and it was mountain air, and that my mother was given the address of that village, and could we take shelter with them for payment. And I said, no, they didn't have enough to eat themselves, let alone taking lodgers in. And finally, my mother asked if they could give us a lift, that we got, you know, that information to give us a lift. And all that obviously was highly dangerous, because they could have been suspicious and don't go to the local German police. And we managed to go back to Krakow. And my mother actually managed once more, with the same sort of group of people, with a different guide. And as far as I remember, she had to pay all over again. So this is why I mentioned my father's money. If it hadn't been for the money, with money, it was a miracle to survive the tour. Without money, we had absolutely no chance whatsoever. And then I remember she bought a sleigh. You know, this was important things for a child. The sleigh was bought, and I was so excited I was going to be able to. But by the time we went for the second time, the snow had melted. So we took the sleigh, and it must have been again at night that we left it in front of a house, and I sort of imagined the child, there would be a child in that house waking up, and then, you know, who left a brand new sleigh in front of the door? And that was all very, very important. I remember then staying the night. So we were taken by the Polish guide to a frontier farm where we stayed, according to my mother, several days. But the time has been sort of catapulted together. And what happened to me there, which I thought was very, very significant about my own feeling of not having a father anymore, is that we were staying in a stable. There were boards, there was sort of hay, and the hay was taken off, and there were boards, and there was literally a hole in the ground, and the boards were put back on again. We must have been maybe, let's say, half a dozen people, and it was not enough to lie down or to sit. It was quite uncomfortable, but I felt obviously quite sheltered in that space. My mother got a claustrophobic attack, which was actually quite harrowing and quite upsetting to me. And I've been actually slightly claustrophobic, and I imagine my mother was very claustrophobic from that time on. And, you know, sometimes people, a group of people like that, if one member endangered them, they could have really literally knocked out by, because this particular farm was so much on the frontier that it was visited quite regularly by the German authorities. Now, the farmers' wife went off on a visit, and then again had just one child, must have been roughly my age, and the farmer said that I could stay with them the night. It was a very blonde little girl, and I could stay actually the night with them. Somehow they had to wait for this Slovak guy to come and pick us up. There were actually several guys. And the fact that little girl moved from the bed where we were sleeping together to move over to her father, I remember absolutely physically as being completely devastating, that she had a father to sleep with, and that brought home to me so badly that loss of not having a father anymore, that I asked to be put back into the hole with my mother. I was happy to be in the hole with my mother than to witness the fact that this little girl had a father to sleep with. And, which seems actually quite, I feel very sorry for myself when I look back at that time. And then we were picked up, and that was sort of incredible sort of feeling of freedom, because my mother said that if we were arrested on the frontier, I remember actually physically going across, so that must have been, let's say, early hours of the morning, and the frontier guards, it was like a path, and there were several, and there was a young boy, and he was a scout, and he went ahead to find, when we could pass. So they were walking away from one another and towards one another, and we obviously went through the breach as the frontier guides with the frontier guards with a sort of lantern, this is how I remember, sort of handheld lantern walk, and we went, and I remember sort of very childishly to say, now 1 foot in Slovakia and 1 foot in Poland, as we were imagining that this footpath was actually physically the frontier. So my mother said that if there were scouts, frontier scouts, roaming the area, and if they would find us on the Slovak side, they would actually arrest us, and we would go to prison for a very short time, I think something like 24 hours, and we would be released. So at that time, it was still an Axis power. They were independent. Slovakia was independent, an Axis power of Germany, and Germans physically did not occupy the country. And I was very, very worried. That worried me. About being arrested was worried me tremendously. Jews going from France into Switzerland did not always have that fate, because according to my mother, in no way would we be not released, and unfortunately some of the Swiss did send our equivalent of cross the frontier, send them back to their death by actually making them go back to France. Which sounds actually quite incredible that Slovaks at the time were actually quite an anti-Jewish sort of type of head of the state would have showed a more humanitarian feelings towards refugees, never mind Jews. I remember then the danger was over and we were in a family. We were in a family somewhere in the mountains. I remember footpath. We were sort of looked after, we had made it. As really, in fact, as a small child, it was, we were saved, no harm was going to come to us anymore, and this symbolic of having the foot baths were given. I'm sure, I don't know if it really happened that somebody in that farm was actually washing our feet, but this is how, this is how I remember it. And from there we went to a small town called Kedmarok, where we were actually stayed in a Jewish family. I understand it was a brother and a sister, but most of the Jews were already deported because they had to a volunteer to go to the headquarters or to a town hall, and then they went forced labor. So the Slovaks themselves did give up their boys, and the men already had been deported by then, but somehow the women were still there. Is going to use these tapes for research, can find some of the information which I'm not giving, they can find out quite easily about the politics and the loss of the Jews at that particular time. The deportation of men and boys from Slovakia.
Now, yes, one point I would like to ask you, which has been concerning me, is that the issue of language in Slovakia, how you and your mother coped, was this an important factor? What language did you speak?
Now, we spoke Polish. My mother would have spoken Yiddish. I would have understood Yiddish. It's very interesting that you would say that. But on the other hand, Slovak is understood by Poles and vice versa. So it's not the same language. Actually, it sounds very different because of pronunciation, but in fact they can understand. So you speak in your language, the other person speaks in the other, and they can understand it. So there never was actually a language problem. I never came up. Only once, in fact, it was after the war where I was in a children's home, and I remember finding a boy who spoke Slovak, and I asked him to translate for me. So obviously I couldn't express myself as well to the other children, the Polish children, and I asked him to interpret. That's the only actual instance I remember of maybe I was even older and whatever I wanted to convey was a little bit more complicated, and that child was there. I think it was a boy, and I remember that vividly, asking him to interpret. So, yes, we changed countries, but it was obviously the language that was quite fluent.
Were you having to be very careful all the time, you know, about your identity? I was wondering, you know, whether you're now getting on sort of 7, 8, aren't you?
Well, I was 8.
How easy it was. Were you finding it traumatic to sort of hide your identity, as it were, as a child? I wonder how difficult that was.
Well, it was, but it's very interesting because it's something you asking me makes me aware how much more aware I was shortly after the war, and how now, all these years later, this particular factor has got a little bit sort of blurred. But there was an enormous thing about me, and that actually came through much more in the Christian family we lived in Slovakia, where I was obviously a little bit older. So when I was younger, even so, I was different from others. But as I told you before, I was not very aware of being amongst non-Jews. I remember that on the train leaving Jaworzyce, so there was a non-Jew lady who was with us. But the demarcation between me as a Jew and the others, we were different from the others, and we were obviously, there was a reason why we had to leave our home. But, you know, it was still, I as a child really was very much sheltered by being surrounded to the great majority by Jews. So probably my experience of being with that little girl who in this, in Krakow, and that little girl wasn't particularly nice to me. Obviously, it really came out that she was different from myself, but she obviously knew I was Jewish because I was in the same family. And I probably didn't mix with very much children outside. And I must have known that I was Jewish, but it didn't seem to sort of cause very much of a problem. One thing I completely forgot, which was in fact quite traumatic at the time, I became very ill. When we were with the Dobrovolska family, I became quite ill, and there were the family, the mother of the house, Mrs. Dobrovolska, was comforting my mother by saying, "Don't worry, we will give her as beautiful a funeral as if she was our own child." And there was a doctor who visited, and my mother, not to be seen by him, was actually in a room without light. Sort of next to it, or he had to go through that light, and she was through the room, sort of home, and she was hiding so that she could hear what was said with the doors open. And he something like that, with sort of something similar to antibiotic before the time. I must have had some sort of infection, which gave me very high fever. And this man, this doctor, somehow managed to get hold of this drug. Everybody was concerned. Whatever I had was very life and danger. I could have had a meningitis, or they were worried I had meningitis. So, and it was obviously much more traumatic to my mother having me so ill than actually to myself. I mean, then convalescent, I was looked after. So we're back in Czechoslovakia, staying with this, and there were other people as well in this household. Now, I remember in Kleslow, the Jewish family we were with had a house, and there was a inner courtyard with an outer wall so that one could go outside without being actually in the street. And then my mother, again, an absolute brainwave, another miracle happened, that she did not want to be known in the street as being a Jew. If you think about it, it's quite extraordinary. I had that feeling of having come into freedom, and, you know, coming from an occupation, coming to a country where I wasn't threatened anymore. And then with my mother being given hospitality apparently that family was found by the Jewish community. You see, well, I thought at one time that this underground channel who made it possible for us to come through found that family for us. But in fact, apparently, it was the Jewish community of that town. It still must have been organized, because I remember we just came straight into that family, so it wasn't that we went to the Jewish community and how would we have had the address. So in fact, it was an address my mother must have been given already in Poland. And there is an extraordinary for a woman who would say, no, I don't want to be connected, I don't want to be known in this town as a Jew, because the moment I'm known that I'm living with you, being a Jewish family, I would be known as being a Jew. And nobody saw us arrive in that small town besides the Czech guide. So my mother apparently asked the Czech guide, not apparently, she did ask the Czech guide to find her job. As a Christian, as a Pole, because Poles were actually, if you, particularly the intelligentsia, so she was known, she made herself out to be a wife of a Polish officer who had to flee Poland. It was very near the frontier, this Kaczmarów was near the Tatra Mountains. So she could be sheltered as a Christian Pole, not sheltered, she could be given employment as a Christian Pole. He came, this guide, who must have been a very nice guy on top of everything else. I mean, he didn't have to go and give that service to her, found her a job, and she went to the interview.